So yeah, just gonna crack myself a beer if you don't mind, because it's
all right, mate, no worries.
Friday here. Yeah, just first time I sat down for a couple of days. Actually, been on the tools for a couple of days. And look, I don't actually drink that much, but it's like every now and again.
Friday night, mate, go for it.
Yeah, well, that's it. And sitting down to have a conversation. So, yeah, so cheers. So yeah, appreciate you coming on and giving me your time.
No worries. I've done. Probably in the last 8 years, I reckon I would have done at least 10 different podcast interviews, and I don't know how many on the radio, probably 20 or 30 on the radio and various bits and pieces.
You're not sick of talking about it yet?
I don't really do a lot of media anymore. I'm a little bit over the whole media thing. Whatever they are.
Yeah, I kind of got that. I kind of got that drift. So, yeah. So, I, well, basically, how did I find you? So, I kind of, I started off actually with Big Cats in Australia. And then, long story, we'll talk about that later. And that sort of led me to Tasmanian Tigers probably still a pretty good chance. There's still some out there. And then I've wanted to do this podcast, honestly, for like about 10 years, because when I first thought about doing podcasts, I was like, I always want to talk to someone, you know, who actually fucking knows what they're talking about, who's not full of shit. And I'll be honest with you, Neil, I had to wait like a long time for you to come along. And, you know, I shouldn't be too disparaging, because I try not to be, but, you know, some of the people that run some of the other, you know, groups and, you know, things to do with cryptozoology. They're not my style, you know, and they go for the clickbait. And, you know, what I really like about you is that you're just honest, right? Like, I don't know if in any video, you actually say, oh, this is a Tasmanian tiger, right? But you'll show some video and say, have a look at this. This is pretty interesting. Like, see what you think, kind of thing. And I just like the fact that you don't do the clickbait. You don't do all that bullshit. And in my opinion, like, you've probably become like the most credible source on the whole like subject, if not in Australia, if not the world. So yeah, that's sort of how I came across you, because I like to, you know, get the right person to talk to about these things. So,
no, that's cool.
So, yeah, I pumped your tires up there a bit.
I know what you mean about the clickbait stuff. Unfortunately, the way the algorithms run now on a lot of this YouTube stuff that I deal with is you've got to have the right kind of thumbnail for your video. Otherwise, it just won't track. Doesn't matter.
What your
video's about, if you don't have the right things on that thumbnail picture, hardly anyone picks it up.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. When I say clickbait, I more meant...
Yeah, I know, like outlandish bullshit sayings and stuff, yeah. Like fake photos.
I've got that on my list, all right. I'm going to ask you about that. But,
we'll get to that.
Before we actually get into all that, one thing I would like to do is just I'd like to ask my guests a little bit about where they grew up and stuff, just because I find, you know, you're constantly putting out that sort of content, and you'll be surprised. I guarantee there's people who follow your channel would actually like to know like a little bit about you. So we won't spend too long on it, but I'd just like to ask a couple little questions. So, whereabouts were you born and whereabouts did you grow up?
I was born in Adelaide. In 1968, at the Queen Elizabeth Hospital, actually. And I grew up in a suburb in the northern suburbs of Adelaide called Gillis Plains. Just a working class, you know, housing commission home. Dad was a truckie, mum was a cook. Pretty straightforward sort of background growing up, I suppose.
Typical Aussie.
Yeah, pretty much, mate.
And you would have been like a Gen X, like latchkey kid like me, like just
definitely.
No one knew where we were, really.
I think we're the last generation that had just the right balance of education and ability to question things, yeah?
Yeah, well, not only that too, like, you know, there was no internet and no phones. That's yep. what I, we were kind of last generation, I reckon, to do that. And that's what I loved about growing up. When my son says to me, oh, Dad, what was so good about 70s, eh? I was like, mate, there was no phones. I mean, there was, but not, I mean, like, you know.
Yeah, mobiles. Yeah.
And there was none of this, no internet or anything. And it was like, mate, we everybody actually socialized, you know.
Yep.
Kids played together. We were outside, you know. And
on weekends, mate, we left home after breakfast and came back just before dinner.
Yeah. Yeah, once it gets dark, you know, you'd start heading home, and it was a different place. All the kids would roll together, and you know, we'd just look after each other. And yeah, I don't know, it was a bit of a, you know, because someone's like, oh, wasn't like you know, the pedos like picking everyone up. I was like, mate, if a pedo came around my street, his car would have got fucking smashed with rocks. You know, like all the kids would have just, you know. So yeah, different generation. So yeah, okay, so that was interesting. So and you went to like, was that a school, like a city school there, or is that?
Yeah,
like
it was northern suburbs. I went to a school called Strathmont Primary School and Strathmont High School, and neither of them exist anymore.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Well, the primary school does, but it's half the size it used to be, and they renamed it. But the high school got bulldozed, and more houses got put in over the top of my high school where I went, basically. So.
Okay.
My suburb, actually, the whole suburb got bulldozed. they rigged in the whole suburb. So,
yeah, that's what they do these days. And so, then, do you still live in Adelaide now? Or?
Nah, mate. No, I moved to Tassie in 2010. My eldest daughter, who was 17 in 2009, died in a car accident, and that really shook the foundations, as you'd expect. And I ended up going overseas for a couple of months at the end of 2009 and did some charity work in India just to try and finish a bad year on a good note. And while I was overseas, I just sort of had a bit of an epiphany, and I thought, when I get home, I'm going to sell up and I'm going to move to Tasmania, because I've always wanted to go down there and live. And it was back then, it was still affordable to buy a house. You know, with the deposit I had, I could have bought four shitty little houses in Queenstown or something. But now those shitty little houses in Queenstown are even worth 200 grand, you know. But back then they were only 25 grand each. So, and that was not that long ago. It's only like 15 years ago, 14 years ago. So, but anyway, I moved to Tassie in 2010, and I was only down here for about 18 months, and I decided I wanted to teach horticulture. So I inquired about doing the course, because I'm a horticulturalist, inquired about doing the course to teach. I think it's called Certificate 4 in Training and Evaluation, or Training and Education. And it was $3,000 to do it here in Tassie, and it was only $500 to do it in Adelaide. So I went back to Adelaide to do it with full intent of coming back to Tassie, because I'd lined up a job at the TAFE in Lonnie. And the job fell through in Tassie, in Lonnie, and I ended up staying in Adelaide for 7 years and didn't get back here till 2019. So, but I've been here ever since and landed a bit of work here and there, just keep the money rolling in and paying the bills. And contrary to popular belief, everybody thinks I live off the fat of the thylacine, but it's just not true.
Wow, there's a bit. Wow, that's a pretty crazy story. There's a bit to unpack there. One thing I would like to ask you. So, when you went, you obviously sorry to hear that about the tragic accident. And like, it's a pretty crazy decision. So you decided, I'm going to India. I need to get away. And did you find that time over there really did give you clarity?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I was on a spiritual journey after she died because I wanted answers. Because I'm a pretty open-minded individual, as you probably worked out just from what I do. But I wanted to know what happened to her and where she went when she died, you know. And it was pretty horrific the way she went out. She was incinerated in the wreck. Her boyfriend was torn in half by the seatbelt, and she was stuck in the car and it caught fire. So it was a real brutal shock exit kind of thing. Then we didn't really. You know, you couldn't have a viewing or anything like that. So it was all very, like, fracturing, I guess, is a good way to describe it. It like, I wasn't shattered as much as I was fractured, So bringing all the pieces back together took a few years, and you know, you never get over something like that, but you do learn to, you know, move on, and life moves on. You can't sit around forever moping around. And that was the thing I really was aware of. I didn't want to turn her bedroom into a shrine where you go in there once a year and cry and shut the door or anything like that. I wanted to be able to let her go eventually, and she did. She left eventually. She hung around for a few years and made a few visits, and that was cool. But yeah, I got really curious about the spiritual side of things, and being in India gave me an opportunity without, you know, too much other influence to think for myself and just do what was going to be for me, basically, because I'd been a father for 17 years, and I've got another daughter as well who's now 25. So I was just sort of trying to rebuild, I guess, and Tassie seemed like the best place to go because I could get down there and be mortgage-free because the house was still really cheap. So I just started surfing the net, found a place I liked, put mine on the market, sold it within a week once I got a good agent on board, and that was it. I was moving to Tassie. So I packed up the dog and the boat and all the crap. I bought a house that was fully furnished, so that was kind of easy. So I think the only furniture I took was my bookshelf and a little stool that my grandfather made. And, yeah, me and the dog, we just off we went. We just hit the road, and I had to change scenery. I needed a, you know, I couldn't stay in that house where I was. I was in a house in Adelaide for 13 years that I'd bought. That was my first home, and this is my second home. I'm in my second place. So I just needed a fresh start, I suppose, and Tassie was the perfect place. And, you know, I was aware of the thylacine stuff back then. And I had my first sighting in 2010, and that sort of didn't totally blow my mind, but it did. And then I had my second sighting in 2014, and that's when I started up the group and everything started to go nuts from there, sort of thing.
Yeah, okay, yeah. Well, a couple of things. Like I said, I found it interesting that time away in India sort of gave you clarity, and then the answer that you came up with over there was Tassie. Like I find in life I'm sort of finding that, like, it wasn't a near-death experience for you, but like you had like a big massive traumatic event, and I'm finding that that, or like a near-death experience, is often actually what it takes for people to kind of get the clarity, like or to sort their shit out, as I say, you know, and realize like, oh, this is, you know, what I should be doing, because I won't go into it right now, but my listeners know very well. So a couple of years ago, about 3 years ago, I had a heart attack, late 40s, and that was kind of like my like
wake up call,
you know, turning point, you know, where like everything after, there's everything before that and there's everything after that, and it just made me realize like, oh yeah, what I wanted to be doing. So yeah, I found that really interesting. So yeah, well, so you go down there, so you have your first sighting obviously in 2010, and like, had you had any kind of interest in Tassie Tigers before that, or just kind of been on the radar but not too interested?
Yeah, sort of. I mean, it was something that I was aware of as a kid growing up, and I remember in primary school, like 1976, it was a long time ago, I had a really evil teacher that used to belt me with a yardstick, actually. She was hopefully she's dead now and went straight to hell. Her name was Miss Lister, and she was a real evil bitch. But anyway, I got moved out of her class into Mr. Goodliffe's class, and he was just chilled and a really nice fella, and we used to have free reading time. I think it was after lunch. So we'd go up the back and grab a book from the library shelf, and we could go and help read with each other, you know. And I grabbed this book on animals, and there was this thing in there, and it said Tasmanian tiger presumed extinct endangered species. And I didn't know what extinct was, and I asked my mate, Robert, in the class, I said, what does extinct mean? And he said, that means there's no more. They're all gone. They're gone. And I do quite clearly remember being intrigued right there and then thinking, wow, imagine if they're not gone. Wouldn't it be so good if they're still around? They look really cool, you know. And I was only like 8 years old or whatever. But so there was a bit of a seed there, but it was definitely seeing one and finding their prints not too far from the house here in Tassie that sort of steamrolled that whole thought process a fair bit.
Yeah. So tell us about that. Tell us about the first sighting.
First sighting was pretty straightforward. I was just walking the dog at the lake near my house where I live, and the dog bolted chasing a wallaby, and I'm yelling out and the dog won't come back, so I'm just sort of walking up the track still. Anyway, I can hear like something's following me, making footsteps, and I can hear like, you know, when you hear little twigs and stuff snap under your feet. And every time I stopped, it stopped, and it was obviously following me, and I couldn't see it, but I could hear it. And it was only 10, 15 meters through the bush, but it was pretty thick bush. Anyway, I come around the bend a bit, about 5 minutes up the hill there, and come to a bit of a clearing, and I could still hear it follow me, and I wanted to get away from it. So I sort of distanced myself, and I was looking back at the area where the noise was coming from, and I seen this thing come out and sit behind a little clump of grass. And then I saw it wasn't huge, so I wasn't so nervous, but it had the like rounded ears. They were short rounded ears sitting up behind this grass trying to look at me, and I was trying to look at it. I got a bit closer and it took off, but I didn't see the stripes. In fact, I've had four sightings and I've never seen stripes once, but that's another story.
Oh, really? That's interesting.
Yeah, well, it was just before dark. It was, you know, it was October. Yeah, it was October 2010, and it was about, I don't know, maybe 45, 50 minutes before dark. So it was still a bit of light around, but it was just on that dusk, you know. So I never really got a good look at it, but it definitely had the long, stiff tail, and I saw it run off through the tea tree, and I thought, wow, you know, that was one of those things. And so that got me intrigued. And then when I had the second sighting in 2014, I was setting up the house as a holiday house, and it was summer and it was quite cold but warm. I had the heater on in the lounge room. It was a little bit too hot, so I opened up the French windows in my bedroom just to let some fresh air in. And it was a pretty moonlit night. It was like daylight kind of thing outside. And one just ran straight past the house up the track coming out of the tin mine out the back of my house. So that, and then a couple of days later, I found a whole succession of prints in the creek over the road near the lake. So that really got me interested then. And I went and I got back to Adelaide, actually. I went back to Adelaide because I wasn't living here. I was just setting my house up as a holiday house and putting a sign out the front and all that sort of caper. And then when I got back to Adelaide, I had pulmonary embolism and I was bedridden for about a month and got quite sick. So while I was sitting in bed, bored out of my skull all day because I couldn't go to work, I decided to start Googling this Tasmanian tiger thing. And I was already on Facebook for the band that I was in. I had a page for our band. And so I sort of used Facebook initially to start looking. And then I started looking through YouTube. And there wasn't many thylacine videos on YouTube back then. There was hardly any. No. Now it's just a wash with every moron with a video camera and a computer is making a thylacine video. And nine out of 10 of them haven't got a clue what they're talking about. It's just straight out of a textbook. But anyway, I started doing the same sort of thing, I suppose, and I put my prints up on a couple of groups and I got bagged out for my prints, and I was pretty confident about these prints because, you know, this thing was massive and it was running fast and big.
They looked good to me.
I just sort of, after, I don't know, 9 months or whatever, I just got sick of all the wankers in the other groups and I just thought, stuff it, I'll start my own group and I'll find out what I want to find out my own way, because I wanted information and I wanted witnesses to tell me what they'd seen, and maybe we could share information and someone might prove it, you know. That was how it all started. I just wanted to share information so that maybe, you know, I might not find it out here, but if you know what the prints look like, you might find it out your way sort of thing, you know.
Yeah.
And it just sort of took off from there.
Okay. So that's how you started it. Yeah. So you basically got sick of their shit, started your group, and now, in my view, it's the best group. It's definitely got the best info on there, that's for sure.
Yeah, I think we're pretty much all over it as far as covering the subject matter in, you know, all the different questions people have. I mean, I'm no scientist. I'm not academically trained, and I don't have a lot of respect for the people that are a lot of the time, because they're usually really just rude know-it-alls, a lot of them, not all of them, but a lot of them are like that. And I just get tired of that skeptical mindset all the time when there's so many things to take you out of that skepticism and take you into a maybe kind of spot, but people just refuse to move and they just sit there and argue the point. And, you know, I try to be 100%. Patient with people, but if people are rude to witnesses or whatever in the group, it's just see you later. Like, I haven't got time. I don't want to mess around with people. And you know, there's been whole groups.
Yeah, that's what I like about it.
There's been whole groups started on Facebook just to hate on me, basically, because they got the shits up because I wouldn't put up with their shit. So they all got together and started a group just to hate me. So good on them. Not really.
Yeah, people are fucking stupid. Yeah, I wouldn't worry about that, man. You're, in my view, like I said, yours is the best. And that's why I like the fact that you don't let trolls, you know, talk shit on there kind of thing. And it's all about good info and good, conversation. And, yeah, it's and what you said about, you know, a lot of the you looked around, there wasn't a lot of other stuff. And, you know, I sort of, when I started going down the rabbit hole, found the same thing. And then, but then I started realizing after following your group for a fair while too, that, you know, there's actually a fair bit of evidence. And what you were saying, you know, about the media being skeptical, you know, a lot of people come back, you know, because once they start talking to me and they realize, you know, because a lot of my friends have asked me about it, they know, like, I'm kind of half Bushman, like, well, hills bloke, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's my that's my tag. And I've spent a lot of time in the bush, mainly fishing, but, you know, a lot of hunting and stuff as well. And my friends know I go out there a lot. So they ask me a lot, you know, do you ever see anything? Have you seen big cats and stuff like that? And they ask me, do you think? And before I came across you, people would say to me, what do you think about the Tassie tiger? And I always used to say, look, you know, I think there's a very good chance they're probably still out there, because when the media, you know, come back with the old, like, oh, well, how come no one's seen one yet? If they still existed, someone would have seen one. When man, first of all, two things about that, right? A, that's not evidence, right? Straight up.
Yep.
B, there's heaps of animals like parrots, and you can go down to Drake's Brook Weir here, just south of Perth, and there's a plaque on a rock that talks about a bird that hadn't been seen for 100 years. And the, you know, some biologist guy was standing on that spot and he saw that bird, right? And this is in a place where, like, people are moving around all the time. The other thing is, you know, I've been in the bush, like you said before, that thing was close behind you and you couldn't see it. People don't realize, right, like, how, first of all, how fucking big it is out there and how much, like, it would actually be very easy, in my view, for animals to survive in pockets where they don't come into, you know, contact with humans. And like I said, if you actually look it up, there's heaps of views. There's a parrot down Esperance Way. Same thing happened 120 years. So, yeah, it annoys me as well because, in my view, it's not evidence, you know. It's just their opinion. And, you know, once I started digging, I said to my mate Pat the other day, I was like, dude, you know, I think that, there's just no doubt, man. Once you start digging, you realize, right, there's actually heaps of evidence out there. So that's actually a question I wanted to ask you. Why do you think it is that, you know, you don't have to really look very deep before you realize that, you know, not two things, not only are they probably still there, but I don't know if I'd go so far as to say government cover-up, but there seems to be some kind of, energy in put in by the authorities to sort of keep this whole thing under wraps. What are your thoughts about all that?
You forgot one word when you said government cover-up. And that was corporate government cover-up.
Oh, yeah. Money.
No? Money, yeah. They're all corporations. Every government department's a corporation. So they're all about money. They're not about service. They're about profitability.
No, that's right.
And, you know, take Forestries Tasmania, for example. They actually are totally unprofitable. They can't make any money at all, but they still keep throwing millions and millions of dollars at it every year because it keeps people employed. So, look, in Western Australia, the information I received recently clearly indicates that it was government cover-up in probably the 60s when they found the Mundrabilla one. And that continued into the 70s, and then finally 1986 rolled around and Michael Archer's paper was accepted as the gospel. Case closed. That's cut right. Down all you want. Dig as many holes as you want. Just make sure that the golf trips are paid for.
Money rules the world again, eh?
Yeah, mate, it does. But look,
The thing makes sense.
The tiger, it's one of those things that they don't really care that it is there, but they don't. I don't think they deliberately want to get rid of it, but they'll manage things the way they see fit. And if it survives, it survives. If it doesn't, bad luck. I think that's the way they look at it as a government.
Yeah, okay. You
know? Yeah. They know it's there. They've clearly hidden it more than once to pretend it's not there. They've lied about it on more than one occasion. I've actually had a guy approach me years ago, about 3 or 4 years ago now, who was a computer expert who did a whole heap of work for the Department of Prime Minister and Cabinet. And this is a rabbit hole for you. Anyway, he started chatting to me and ringing me, and he was telling me some pretty amazing shit. But he'd found, because he had to refile all the government files from the Department of Prime Minister and Cabinet. Now, Department of Prime Minister and Cabinet was created by Whitlam so he could keep secrets. That's where everything got hidden, in there. All the shit they don't want you to know about goes in there, in that department. Yeah. So what Whitlam did when he was in office, got the suppression order of 50 years or whatever it was, 40 years, came off it a couple of years back, and that was when we found out exactly what that prick did to the country, you see. But anyway, this guy was going through all of that. That's another rabbit hole. He was going through all of that that documentation and refiling it on new computer systems, and he come across a insurance claim that was paid out by the New South Wales government, you know, like the state government insurance commission kind of thing. And a tourist was in a hire car in northern New South Wales and smacked out a male thylacine and ran it over and smashed the car up. And the head was completely mushed on the thylacine and gone, but the full body was there. And he said there was photos of this thing. And this one was paid out specifically by the government and not the insurance company that would have normally handled it, so they could keep it all in-house. And they were saying how it's the first one that they've found in New South Wales physically since the 1870s or the 1880s or something. Might have been the 1860s. Wow. So that was two physical ones from the, you know, mainland New South Wales.
And he saw the photos.
This dude saw the photos. And well, there was another story he told me of two CSIRO fellas in Victoria that found an injured one and gave it surgery and helped it out and got it back on its feet and got it back out in the bush. That was another thing he discovered. Wow. He also discovered some lies about the ones in Western Australia in caves and things like that. There was one, I think there might have been another one found in a cave in the 2000s that might have been hidden and kept out of the public.
Yeah, well, there was rumours over here, I think, I want to say around 2005, 2006, of another one that was found on a dig, I'll say, because I've got a few good contacts over here, and the WA stuff interests me particularly because I hadn't heard the exact same story, but to give it a bit of context, so I started going down, we won't say where, you and I know where, but we'll just say down South WA.
Yeah.
I started going down that area about 80s, 90s, right? And I started hearing a few stories, and I spent a lot of time down there, mainly fishing the rivers, but, you know, it's real remote. And, like, I like going places that are hard to get to, you know, because I found that, you know, my target, I like targeting big black brim, and I found, you know, all these real hard to get to rivers where people don't go, they're loaded full of big ones, you know.
In the estuaries.
So anyway, 80s. Yeah, and the rivers. And I'm a bit of a Huckleberry Finn man. I like going up these rivers. And, you know, I started going up, meeting a few farmers, spending a lot of time down there and, you know, like a month or two a year kind of thing. And, yeah, I started hearing a few stories. And one of the stories that one of the farmers kind of told me was that all he said was that, you know, he thought they were around. He'd never seen one, but that at some point in the past that government officials had been down there, and all he said was DNA samples.
Yeah.
So I didn't know about, you know, hair or anything at the time. He just said to me that DNA samples were taken,
and they
he said if I knew anyone who could do digging in government departments, yeah, that they came back positive for thylacine, should say that first.
Yeah.
And then he said they're held in government departments. If you know anyone who's got access to that, fucking look there. And I was like blown away. And then I kind of dismissed it for years, you know, and and all the rest of it. But I do know a spot down south of the back of one of these rivers. It's got a tree and it's got the big scratch marks in it, you know.
Oh, yeah.
I've seen it.
The males have a scratch pad. The big males definitely have a scratch pad.
Well, yeah, I was kind of thinking that was more probably big cats, you know, rather than thylacine, which actually I did want to ask you about your thoughts about that, because that's how I sort of came to thylacines in a way, was because the guy who sort of taught me or most of my fishing and hunting stuff, he was like a real proper fucking bushman, like the best fishing hunting guy I ever come across. And,
yeah, right.
You know, just would research his stuff, like, you know, hunt by moon phases. This guy was just like, you'd all fucking live it. And breathe out there.
Yeah.
You know? And anyway, he started telling me about big cats down south, you know, and because have you heard about the Nanup tiger?
Yeah, mate. Would have heard. Yeah, we launched that. Our doco in Nanup.
Yeah, so, you know, all the stories about that, and then, you know, like, are they real? And then, you know, the book Savage Shadow, he obviously put me onto that, and he was like, look, man, this is the Bible in terms of big cats, you know, as far as I'm concerned. And so then I started realizing, oh, mate, I reckon it's the best book. And, yeah, there's so many people should read that, because there's so much bullshit that goes on forums and misinformation, but we'll get to that later. I've got that in my notes. But yeah, so he gave me that book, and then I sort of came to realize, like, oh, and then I started, like, it wasn't until literally probably 20, 30 years later that, yeah, I spoke to one of those farmers, and I remembered the conversation again, because I did a podcast actually with a guy on here who'd seen them even as far east as Albany, or reported sightings, you know. And then I started thinking, oh, maybe some of these big cats are not actually like big cats. They're actually thylacines. What do you think about that?
Yeah, look, thylacines come in quite a few colours and shades, and with or without stripes. Sometimes they have thick bands instead of thin stripes.
Okay.
And sometimes the stripes go right down to their belly and around their belly, apparently. I've had a few reports of that.
Yeah.
But look, yeah, I think about some of the big cat variation sightings could be Thylacoleo as well. There's a lot of evidence to suggest that those things are still around, especially in Queensland and WA and parts of Northern Territory as well. I had a sighting recently of what a guy described as two big things that were sort of like Rottweilers, but they weren't. They were marsupial, and they were black with white stripes. And they were huge and weird and ran off into the bush. And it was like, what the hell's that? You know? He's an Aboriginal fella, so he was pretty blown away by it. And
that was in Northern Territory. Big cat sightings in Australia. You think like a few. Have you got any theories on that? You think a few big cats have actually, you know?
Oh, look, there's every chance that big cats were already here when white fellas got here. You know, the British were about the fifth bunch of Europeans to land in Australia. They weren't the first.
That's also my belief.
There's evidence of a Spanish galleon on, what's that island off Queensland? They've found a few bits and pieces have come out of this swamp there. They found a Spanish...
Yeah.
A brass Spanish kind of army helmet from the 1600s or something in this swamp in Queensland on this island. Stradbroke Island, is it? I think it's Stradbroke.
Yeah, well, the Bradshaw paintings, I don't know if you know about them, but a bunch of paintings up north, and, like, they're not Aboriginal, and they're basically, like, if you look at them, there's a book on them, and there's ones that look like Incan style. There's ones that look like African style. There's ones that look like Polynesian style. There's ones that look like American Indian style. And if you ask Aboriginals about them, they say, oh, shit art from before our time. So I reckon, yeah, I'm with you. I reckon people have been traveling around the world forever. And I reckon at some point, like possibly even maybe in modern times, because this is my theory anyway. Tell me what you think of this. But yeah, I think people bring them. And then what happens is, because you get these sightings, like you'll get sightings around Nanup for 20 or 30 years and then nothing. And then you'll get like sightings around another area. And I think what happens is, you know, because there's only one or two getting dropped off, people bringing them here, it's like enough to sustain a small population maybe, but not like a big population, like over a big area sort of thing.
The thing with the big cat thing though is Australia-wide, just like the thylacine thing. So it's quite possible there's a lot more big cats out there than what we realise, you know. Now, how they got here is debatable. There's several sources. There's pets that have been let go. There's wildlife menageries that have got away. There's, you know, soldiers repatriating them as their mascots and letting them go because they were leaving Australia and going back to America or whatever, you know.
There's a million theories. I don't know about that one, but, yeah, the rest of them are good. In Savage Shadow, he reckons he investigated all the American boats and circuses because that used to be a good story too, Crash Circus. And he investigated all that and he reckons he couldn't confirm any of that.
Yeah, it's a great book. I read it a few years ago.
But you know what I reckon? I'll give you an example, right? My old mate that I told you about, may he rest in peace, he's passed now, but the hunter, you know, he was a mad fisherman as well, right? And he loved bass on lures, right? And he was just fucking mad for it, Neil, right? And can't explain why. But bass are only found on the East Coast, right? So in the 80s, man, he spent $3,500 of his own money getting a whole heap of bass and putting them in dams in Perth metropolitan area so that he could go there and fish for him. And, you know, and I was thinking, when he did that, I realized, I was like, that's how big cats got here. You know what I mean? There's just like so many people would have translocated so many animals. Think about all the people over time who, you know, back in, like you say, Spanish galleons, like maybe they bought some big cats over here. And they've got, people forget, like Napoleon had emus in his garden.
Yeah, like the French let, there was a, you know, of Kangaroo Island in South Australia?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, there was, the French landed there before the English, and it was around the time that Matthew Flinders came through charting the coastline of South Australia. I think it was 1804, and they bumped into the French, and the French let pigs go on Kangaroo Island. Now, there was a dwarf emu there on Kangaroo Island because it was an island, so they were smaller. And within 30 years, they were extinct. When they first went to settle there in 1834, the British, the emus were gone. The pigs wiped them out because they're a ground nesting bird and the pigs destroyed their nests. That's what happened. And they've still got a pig problem.
Yeah, it didn't even take very long.
But anyway, we're off on a tangent here. Hit me with one of your questions there, mate.
We were just talking about the big cats and how they got here. So, one thing I did, so, you know, going back to Tassie Tigers, so what areas in Australia do you actually think that they are most likely still, you know, some populations? Obviously, we said Southwest WA.
Well, I'd Tassie. Say all of Western Australia. I'd say even the remotest, driest deserts out in the real central guts of it.
Right at the
have
top.
Got yeah. have got yeah. thylacines in them. There's probably less per, you know, 100 square kilometres than there is anywhere else. But they the sightings that people before me have collected and the ones I've collected since them are all over Australia in every kind of habitat you can think of, in particularly the coastline. They like to be in the last 20 Ks before the coast. But they'll go. They'll be seen everywhere. Like they're definitely a migrating animal. You know, they move around.
Yeah. And so, what do you think's going on? Basically, just small enough populations staying away from people. Basically,
I think they've always stayed away from people. They've always been good at it. The very first reports from the English in Tasmania, the colony was settled. They'd found prints and something, but they were there for about 18 years before they caught one or saw one or something. I can't remember. It was a long time.
Yeah, that's right.
They're very elusive animals.
I remember reading that.
Yeah, well, I might be wrong on the amount of years or whatever, but it was a really long time before they caught one. And I think they'd only seen them twice or something. I think it was the Dutch went through there in the 1500s or something, and they landed and they found their prints on the beach and they reported prints like a tiger's on the beach. So that would mean that they were pretty big prints. They wouldn't be little prints.
Interesting. Yeah, and it's just like, you know, there's just a remoteness of this country. Like, I'll never forget, like, you know, I do a bit of prospecting every now and again. I was talking to an old bushy gold prospector, and he said to me, mate, he goes, you could go from here to Darwin in a straight line, right? And he goes, and you can walk 50 metres off that straight line and you're the first person to stand on that spot.
Yeah.
And it just made me realise, like, oh, yeah, he's right. And it's like Tassie, you know, that whole West Coast. You know, you could probably, you know, get a chopper to drop you over there anywhere and you're the first person to probably stand there. And it's just so dense, like, yeah, it's just not an excuse in my view, yeah. So you reckon pretty much all over. What about Papua New Guinea and those kind of areas? Because there's rumours of them up there.
Yeah, look, there's every chance they are still in Papua New Guinea, but it's only in the last 2 years that it's really become an issue for thylacines in Papua New Guinea. You know, there was, I remember when I first got into this 10 years ago, there was about three stories of Papua New Guinea, and Ned Terry, who was a thylacine researcher from Tassie, he went to Papua. He was the first one to go there. He was the first thylacine researcher to go there and meet some natives and have a look and go for a bit of a walk, but it was a pretty remote area where he went. It was way up in the mountains. Yeah.
Crazy, hard to get to.
Yeah, look, they could be there, but, you know, why would you risk malaria and machete gangs and indeed cannibalism in some cases still to this day?
Fuck that.
Instead of just going to the mainland where there's, you know, probably close to 10,000 sightings now all up, there'd have to be, of thylacines on the mainland. It'd be very close to 10,000. You know, like it just makes no logical sense whatsoever. And we find those big five-toed prints in Queensland, Western Australia, South Australia, Victoria, and Tasmania. So
yeah, that's what's really spun me out about this whole, you know, Tassie tiger journey is, like, at the start I thought, oh, maybe they're in Tassie, and then as I got into it, I realised, oh man, like, they're getting prints and casts, like, all over, and to me that's pretty good evidence. It's as good as you could want for someone.
It is measurable evidence. It can be tested.
Exactly. Yeah, 100%. And it's like, so, you know, even bodies, like, you know, I had a little encounter. I'll tell you a little funny story. One thing that made me realize about this whole Tassie tiger thing too is, like, so years ago, I'm up the bottom of the Exmouth Gulf, like, real, real remote area. Like, the closest homestead's an hour, like, maybe 2 hours kind of thing, and driving into the bottom of the Gulf there. And a mate of mine actually had a video camera on his lap, switched on, would you believe, because we were taking some video of the track. We make little videos of our fishing things. Anyway, this animal, we're just coming along near, and this animal, the first time we see it, it's in the air. It's halfway across the road, jumping, and this thing jumped across the track right in front of me, and it happened so fast, right, that I can honestly say, right, I never even saw the head. All I saw was kind of the body and the back. And then it hit the scrub. So we pull up. My mate's like trying to film. I jumped up in the car. Give me the camera. Give me the camera. And I got like a couple of about 6 seconds of footage of this thing running away through the bush, which I've got up on. Yeah, I've got it. It's on my YouTube channel. If you go on YouTube and type in, I think it's called Big Cat or Wild Dog, because, you know, question mark. Anyway, long story short, I showed the footage to my mate and he said to me, look, man, ran like a cat, but prints are a dog, because I filmed the prints on the, you know, the road where it crossed the road and all the rest of it. Anyway, you know, I think it was a dog too. But what it showed me, Neil, was like I could have been fucking 6 feet away from a confirmed big cat that jumped right across the track in front of me with a switched on video camera going, and we still didn't see it.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? And it made me realize then, like, fuck, man, you got to be like, this thing's got to walk right up to you. You got to be like, you know, and because people would say, oh, how come there's never any good footage? Well, actually, there is. But it made me realize, like, oh, just how hard. And I just realized, like, man, like I said, we were 260 Ks from Exmouth.
Yeah.
It's just bush between us and there. You know, it was like, yeah.
What's it called again? I'm on YouTube now. What was it called?
Cool. Big cat or wild dog. If you just look up, or hills bloke, but yeah, if you type it in. But I showed my mate, who's my hunter guy I was talking about.
Remote. And him, oh, and I remember this clip.
Yeah, that's mine.
12 years old, is it?
Yeah, it's real old. And look, I actually said on there, right, I think it's a dog. And if you go read the comments, it's funny because heaps of people are going, nah, it's not a cat, mate. It's definitely a dog. And I was like, yeah, that's what I said. It was a dog. But Yeah, that's my clip. But it was an interesting experience, you know. But it was interesting. My mate, he said he thought it ran like a cat, right? But he goes, what happens is the dogs that run in bound on scrub, it for right, a cat. They bound, yeah, because the scrub, there's a lot of short scrub and it scratches their belly. So they kind of bound because they can't, like, just run through like they're running, pushing through. And that was his reasoning because he reckoned the prints on the road. And look, I agree, the prints on the road look like dog, but it was a cool experience, yeah.
Yeah, no, they're not dog prints, mate. That's not a dog. They're huge.
You don't reckon?
Nah. Well,
there are people on there that say
dingo's feet don't get that big.
Oh, man. This is the thing that made me wonder, right? Neil, it was fucking pretty big, man. Like, I've done a lot of hunting. I've done a lot of stuff in the bush. Like, I don't know. It was, to me, it was like 50 kilos plus kind of thing.
Yeah, like, it's a big beastie.
Yeah.
It's a
but it jumped right across the track in front of us. And Neil, like, you would think that would be perfect setup, right? But it happened so fast, I never even saw the head.
Yep. You can see the head in that footage, though. You can see the round ears.
Yeah, the ears.
Mate, that's not a dog print. No way is that a dog print. That's marsupial print.
He said the ears too. And, you know, the other thing is him and Randy, they had, like, between them, they had, like, he worked it out, like, 80 or 90 years hunting in the WA bush, and he said they'd never seen a dog that colour.
That's either a thylacine or a thylacoleo, I reckon. That's a big print. And it's got those long sausage-like
I always wonder.
With the very broad base to the claw. The claw's a triangular shape to it. The base of the claw is really broad and it goes down to a point slowly. They're big claws on thylacines. You have a look at the
photos. Change my mind, Dick. Yeah, it was, mate.
That's a great.
The thing that shocked me is how big it was.
Have you been in our group for very long on Facebook?
A while. I'm not sure how long.
Did you load that up? I want to say
like about
originally?
A year or so.
I remember.
Nah, not yet. Nah, someone else might have put it up. Yeah, someone did. I haven't posted it.
It's great. It's a good clip.
Yeah, it was so cool experience, and it was just like. You know, it just made me realize so many things. Like, it's actually really hard to, even if you see one proper, you still, like, mate, we had the video camera switched on in his hand.
Yeah. And that was all you got of it before crazy. You got your act together.
What do you think's the best single bit of evidence that you've ever, like, seen for the thylacine? Would you, because I loved your video that you put out, the top 10. I'll put all the links in the comments as well for the listeners to Neil's videos. But, yeah, one of the best ones, the one recently where you put the top 10 best thylacine footage, like that thermal one. There's a few there I'm not 100% sure on, I reckon. But, yeah, that thermal one, mate. That's,
the coloured one or the black and white view, one?
The coloured one, the coloured thermal one, that's thylacine like every day of the week.
Yeah, that was in January last year.
Just the shape of the body and all that. And also the other one that's really spun me out is the WA one. What do you think's the best one?
I think the recent WA one for me, as far as I know, it's not really good clear footage, and typically the trail camera triggered when it was halfway past it, so it's only in view for 2 seconds at the most. You know, it's just gone because it's hooting when it comes past. It's
pretty good, but.
But it's got the tail, it's got the very short back foot, the hock, and you can clearly see stripes. Yeah. I can see stripes on it. There's a couple of people on YouTube that reckon they can't see stripes, but the vast majority of people agree that that's a thylacine.
It's those people have got reasonably their eyes painted definitive. On.
As far as visual stuff goes, I think that's very good evidence. Best. I think. The DNA evidence that we got in 2017 was very good evidence too, but it was completely ignored. I cannot get one media outlet in Australia to talk about the DNA evidence that I got in 2017.
Why do you think that is?
I haven't got millions of dollars to pay for stories. I guess.
Yeah. Back to the money. Yeah. And yeah, it's a weird thing, isn't it? It's so strange. But yeah, I like the WA one. You know what I did? Because I do a bit of video work as well. So I got that. I did a little clip of it. I put it in Premiere. And that 2 seconds, I just played over and over and over again. I made it about 30 long. But as I got like down to like the last five, I started making them half speed and then one third speed, just so I could, my eyes could watch it like over and over and over again. And oh, I reckon, mate, that's as good as anybody skeptic could ask for. Like,
yeah,
that to me is just 100% thylacine. The stripes, and not just that, but the shape. Like, you explain it in the video really well, where you stop it and show the overlay, the shape and the tail. Like, it's thylacine every all day, every day in my book.
Yeah. Did you see it on the 6 o'clock news?
No.
Nah. Did you see it in the WA Advocate?
It's such a weird thing. Like, I can't get my head around. Like,
it's games we play. Like, I'll give you an example of how silly it is. This guy Tim Noonan's just done his new doco, which is photographically fantastic. He's a great editor and cameraman and photographer. Yeah, but it's got no content. He had to go to New Guinea and do a drama to get some content. He's been watching too many Forrest Galante videos, yeah? And he's got hooked off on the I haven't even watched part two. I watched part one just to critically analyze it. But part two is – everyone's saying it's just dramatized crap about him getting kidnapped in New Guinea. It's basically the whole story.
Yeah, it's just rubbish.
Yeah. So
obviously we should mention that the Forrest – Galante stuff.
Well, look, if you want to talk about it now, we can. Look, the guy's clearly a clickbait clown, really, and just says whatever sensational crap he can with his $45,000
I was really disappointed.
Sorry?
Because I was really disappointed because I've followed him for a fair while and thought he was like a pretty like decent bloke. But as soon as I saw those pictures, right,
You knew it was bullshit, yeah?
I said fake. And you know how I knew? And, like, I was trying to tell him on the video, I'm typing in the comments, the shape of the pictures, right? First of all, it's not taken on an iPhone or a digital SLR. And you know how I knew the shape? Because I use a program called Midjourney AI, which is an AI picture, like, a program. And it's got, like, a set default size, which is actually a really unusual size. It's not the same shape as anything else. And that's what shape they were. I was like, mate. The other thing is I was actually going to go on Midjourney and make some fake photos to actually show like how fucking easy it would be to do. It's so easy to do, right? So because to me, like unless you got video like or thermal, like don't even talk, like photos is just so easy to fake, you know what I mean? And I was going to put them out there in the ether, and then I thought about it. I was like, oh, no, I don't want fake fucking
Tassie Tiger photos
floating around on the internet. Yeah.
Look, I'll tell you something. I knew it was fake before it even came out because they emailed us the day after I put out that top 10 video. And if you read in the description box, and your viewers or your listeners, sorry, might want to have a read of the description box on the top 10 video as well, I found a segue to bring Forrest into the discussion. Put it that way.
Yeah, okay.
And I'll really basically call him out for being the scumbag that he is.
Look,
and that's why he knee-jerk reacted and pulled his stunt. The very next day we got the bogus email from the bogus witness. What a coincidence. Yeah, okay. And then three weeks later, he releases the photos because I haven't fallen for it because I didn't come down in the last shower. And in the middle of his stupid video about his bogus photos that he was promoting, he bags out Tagoa for not listening to the witness. I mean, are you fucking real? Look at it. The guy sitting there with a paper bag over his head talking to the camera, hiding his face, and he reckons he's seen a thylacine? Yeah, right. Of course he's
and he didn't
the
even
truth, yeah?
he didn't even know like what airport he'd flown to and all. And I'm like, are you fucking serious? Like,
what a bunch of fucking Hollywood wankers. I mean, what a bunch of dicks. Mate. I'm going to say it. They're dickheads.
It was so bad. Yeah, I agree. And it was so disappointing. Like I said, I really went down a few rungs on my ladder. And it's like, we don't need this. This is just like making it more of a joke to the public. You know what I mean? We need, well,
that's
we need
the part public of it. He doesn't care. Really. He's just a clickbait queen, you know. He just yeah. wants to get as many views as he can get. And he's getting hundreds of thousands yeah. of views, creating his celebrityness. But there's a website called the Recently X Species website. It's very got some really good scientific stuff on there. It's put together by a guy named Brandon Holmes. He's done a paper about Forrest Galante and his fraudulent behavior. He's actually done a scientific paper about Forrest. So there's another one for your listeners to go and have a look at. If you
yeah, I'll look that up.
See I'm how much of a bogus down. Clown this guy is. Brandon's actually done a paper about him.
What's the most out of the whole, you know, let's talk about the whole thylacine scene. Like, what is that the thing that bugs you the most? Like, the one thing that bugs you the most about the misinformation that gets put out there?
No, not really. I mean, the official narrative, I call it the thylacine extinction narrative.
Yeah.
Because that's what it is, you know, it's just a narrative. And there's two people that have been controlling the narrative for the last 45, 50 years, and that's Michael Archer and Nick Mooney. They're the narrators of the narrative. And
who put them in charge?
Well, someone obviously died and left them in charge, didn't they?
Yeah.
I think Eric Geiler died in Tasmania and Bob Green died in Tasmania, and that left Nick Mooney. Both Bob and Eric were adamant the animal was still there. They weren't prepared to say it was extinct, but they didn't really know how many there was.
Right.
So, but, yeah, I think the disinformation thing, the most annoying thing for me is the actual print. What a footprint looks like, because we find those big five-toed prints everywhere, every state, just, you know, and it's not getting listened to by anyone in the zoological world, because Nick and Dr. Archer control the narrative. Dr. Archer just shuts down anyone who talks about sightings, and then in the next sentence he'll say, but we don't see them. Why won't they come out and show us themselves? After he's just sort of, you know, told people that see them are drunk on their way home from the pub and believe in UFOs and Loch Ness monsters. He actually says that. He's not remotely being scientific at all in his attitude. And here's the guy that wrote the paper, and he's not even considering any evidence whatsoever. He's just, it's time to move on.
Yeah. It makes me wonder why they. You know, because why they don't kind of embrace it, or at least, you know, like I said, like, you're probably right, it all comes back to money. But
of course it does.
I think it's only a matter of time as well now before someone actually, like, physically gets one. That, I don't know what your view is, but I kind of think that it's just a matter of time.
I've always thought it's just a matter of time, but I've got to tell you, I've been thinking that for 10 years and it hasn't freaking happened.
Well, yeah, look, you know, those parrots and birds, right, because when I was doing a bit of research for this, I was looking up, oh, how many animals are there actually that have, you know, been missing? Mate, you'd be surprised all over the world. It would shock you. And even in Australia, a couple of parrots, like a smaller bird, like a robin, a frog, a few other bits, 100, 120 years, and they're just living like, right around where people are living.
You know how Archer and Pask want to, you know, build a thylacine in a Petri dish? When they were talking about cloning it originally, they were talking about cloning this mouth brooding frog, I think it's called. And they were saying it was extinct and all they had was the DNA. And they were running around spruiking all this stuff to get all this money to clone this frog, right? Someone rediscovered it in the meantime and said, it's not extinct, we've got it here. They wanted all of the they'd caught so they could do their experiments on them. So they were still going ahead with experimenting, trying to clone them when they only had one population of them to bring the species back. Rather than just bring them back, they had to try and clone them and own them at the same time. It's all about the dollars. The patents for the technologies that they're developing to do this gene sequencing, the patents are already in.
Yeah.
You can look them up. The Wilson Family Trust is the one who gave Pask his first injection of money. And if you look that up on the ATO, there's another company name that goes with it. And then you look that company name up and see where that one's based. And it's really weird that the associations of some of these company names, some really interesting stuff out there.
Oh, yeah, like what?
Well, just look it up, find out.
I'll look it up. Yeah, that sounds good.
There's a company that's got a lot of problems with the EPA that seems to be giving Mr. Pask a lot of money to try and build a thylacine.
One of those. Yeah, so lately, like obviously it's sort of come into the press. I found in the last year or two it's becoming more popular in terms of this, what we're talking about, you know, the bringing them back through DNA and obviously the woolly mammoth as well. You've probably heard about that. People have been on Rogan talking about it. I've been down the rabbit hole. It seems like it's kind of legit in terms of like that they can do it. So, but I'd be interested to know your thoughts on, you know, bringing the Tassie tiger back. First of all, can they do it? You know, are they really going to do it? And then, you know, where are they going to go? How are they going to be managed? All these kinds of things. What do you think about all that?
Well, Dr. Archer, who was the original spruiker of the cloning thing, announced in 2004 that they couldn't clone them. We haven't got enough good quality DNA to clone them. We have to abandon the project. Started the project in 1999, 2000, somewhere around there, he announced it. So what they're doing now isn't cloning, but it's still being branded by the media as cloning when it's not cloning. They are not cloning. They're doing CRISPR technology where they gene sequence and they build a thing, one gene at a time. They've got to read all the genes and get them all there and put them all in and see what they come up with. And there's a quote getting around in the media from Pask about what they're doing. And in 10, you know, I think it was, within 10 years, we hope to have a thylacine-ish looking thing, which I didn't think sounded particularly scientific, really, as a statement for what they hope to develop in 10 years. But these things are going to be owned. They're going to be in a menagerie. It'll be like Jurassic Park. This is what they want. They've actually said that publicly. Horner from Colossus has said that publicly in a TED Talk. He's always wanted his own zoo, and Pask is of the same mind. So whatever they create, there's no way on earth there will be any chance they can just let that go out in the wilds of Tasmania to run around and kill all the wallabies and save the farmers using 1080 and all this other pipe dream bullshit that they're spruiking. You know, they've even selected a committee of people to oversee the reintroduction of the thylacine when they bring it down in a crate, you know, from Texas, you know, or Melbourne.
Yeah, well, when they said that,
they're building these things, you know.
When they said that, I was kind of like, straight away, when I hear the government say things like that, I'm skeptical, you know.
They're not the government. It's not the government saying it. The government's not saying anything, actually. They're conveniently saying nothing at all, the government. There's no spokesman from Biosecurity Tasmania or National Parks making a statement about the cloned thylacines coming home to run around the bush and play wallaby killer, you know. It's all BS.
Yeah, no, it just seemed, it seems, I don't know, it seemed to me maybe technology will be better in the future and maybe they'll be able to do it, but, yeah.
Who's going to teach it to be a thylacine? It's just going to instinctively know what it wants to eat and run around and rip the heads off of wallabies, you know.
Well, I think, like, we should be concentrating on the ones that are still there.
Well, they're clearly still here in Tassie and they're clearly still on the mainland as well, you know, in many, many parts of the country.
That's what shocked me. That's what's really shocked me, the amount of sightings on the mainland.
We had a really good one in Kakadu last year and on the same day we have one in South Australia, on the same day, up the Riverland.
They're just everywhere. I think they're just a real elusive animal, and they've just and look, you know, like I said, you know, I could take you to places even just in the southwest of Western Australia, right, where people have been going for, like, close to 200 years or whatever, and I can show you fish, right, that have never seen humans.
Yeah,
and what I mean by that is, sometimes you'll get, like, whenever we're fishing for brim, right, they'll like in Perth or Mandurah, places where they fish no boats, right, they'll follow the lure often, but as soon as they see the boat, they're out of there, right? Yeah. We've been like down south, I've been catching fish, and I've had fish come right up to the boat, like right up next to the boat, like looking at me like, oh, like what are you? Like I've never seen you before. And when you let a fish go, right, it doesn't spook the rest of the school. And it's only happened to me like in remote places, like, you know, 60 miles in, off Shark Bay and places like that where you just know. And like I said, these places are not really necessarily that remote, but I can show you, yeah, animals that like have never even seen humans before.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's
it's a lot
very
more
good.
Remote than you think. Well, I think that's probably not a bad spot to wrap it up, Neil.
You haven't got any other questions there on your list?
No, I've covered. I've pretty much covered. I'm just having a look now. We've pretty much actually covered it all. Yeah, we've pretty much covered all those. So I think it's actually, yeah, go.
Well, I was just going to sort of wrap it up for you. As far as evidence goes, the video I had, it's annoying because it's not conclusive, but the video I had from the trail camera in 2015, and I think on the YouTube channel it's called Striped Animal Northeast Tasmania, where it's sitting in front of the trail camera grooming itself. Have you seen that one?
Yeah, I've seen that one, yeah.
In the very first frame, you can see the ear. And it's not a wallaby ear. It's a short, round, thick-edged thylacine ear, but you only get a real tiny glimpse of it. That was always, like, to me, it was so early on in the game when I got it, and I was like, damn, that was so close. If it only just moved an inch to the left, you would have seen the whole ear, and it would have been just bang.
Across a bit.
That was really close.
You keep them out there, like I said, it's only a matter of time now, and I actually don't – I wonder if not, like, what happened too, right, was, you know, when white people came here, the population definitely got hit hard. So it dropped back to, like, you know, maybe a few animals or whatever. And I think maybe now that part of the reason why they're getting seen a bit more too is that the population's maybe starting to build up a bit, you know, because it literally just takes, you know, long, long time, you know. You can imagine at some point, you know, humans were reduced to, like, a few thousand – people all around the earth. It's been proven, you know, from DNA as well. So I think, what do you think about that? You think that's a possibility that they got hammered, no one saw them for a while, now they're making a bit of a comeback?
I think on the mainland they got hammered out of all the settled areas pretty much. So all the main populous areas they got hammered out of. They were mentioned in the early records by first settlers in quite a few spots.
That's right.
And they're in all the old newspaper articles. All over the mainland, and so are thylacoleos as well. And this, whatever the bunyip was, there's evidence that the bunyip was a thylacoleo as well. There's a couple of reports of thylacoleos in water.
That's right.
Having to go at one people. Of those. So they were from Victoria, I think, those reports.
One of the best ones is actually by a park ranger on a thylacine sighting in like 1800s.
In the 1800s?
Yeah, like right when they first started going down WA. That's one of the things that sort of really got my attention was there's a record, I think it's mentioned in Savage Shadow. Park ranger, 10 feet away, like on the road, crossed the road in front of him on a fire road. And this guy's a park ranger, so he knows. And that's when I started realizing, like, oh, like this goes way back.
Yeah, there's a painting from WA too, a really early colonialist painting that's a very long, it's like a, what do they call it, when you do a landscape photo on a mobile phone and you move the screen around and you get that big wide-angled lens, you get the wide photo. It's like that, this painting. And there's about three thylacines in the painting, and it's colonists and Aboriginals mixing together at the very first white contact when they first built a settlement there. And there's thylacines in this painting from back then.
Yeah. Well, the Aboriginals have got heaps of paintings of them.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Now, look, the thylacines are definitely in WA. It's probably got the biggest population because it's the biggest state. And we just get so much info from WA. There's more from WA than anywhere else. without a doubt.
Yeah, that's crazy. That's the one thing that's really surprised me. But it does make sense when you actually think about it. You look at Australia as a whole, where the people are, where the food is, all that. It does make sense.
There's,
really.
There's a lot of places where the people aren't, you know.
That's right. And a lot of food, they could exist down there. And literally, like, yeah, some of those places, you know, where some of these sightings are coming from, where you and I know, it's honestly, it is really, it is just remote. There's sections there, I reckon, where just people have never even probably walked, you know, and it's not even, not necessarily that far from the highway, but it's just so remote.
Yeah.
Between there and the coast, and it's like no one goes in there.
Have you seen Paul Day's footage? That's the one on Sunrise running through the wheat stubble.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. That's quite famous. Oh,
That's a thylacine.
Yeah, what do you think of it?
That's absolutely a thylacine.
I was going to say, I reckon maybe like a, not a bit smaller one, like just not quite a fully grown one. That's kind of, because a lot of people are saying to me, oh, fox, but I was like, I reckon it's the right shape. It's just, it's a bit smaller.
It's filmed on York Peninsula and not far from there, I can't remember the name of the place, they found a cave with some fossils in it, and there's a subspecies of thylacine from there called Thylacinus yorkellus.
Oh, yeah. I think I've heard
of that. Now, when you look at that animal, it looks like it's got a really long, hairy coat. It doesn't look like a short-haired animal. And a lot of the thylacine sightings, they say it sort of, it didn't have really long hair. The hair sort of stuck to the body.
Interesting.
Yeah. Maybe but I, look, there's every chance it could be a Thylacinus yorkellus. There was one killed over, there was something with stripes and young, a female killed on York Peninsula in 1919, I think it was. Excuse me. It made it into the papers over there. Someone caught it in a trap eventually and shot it. They had to put the gun barrel down its throat and blow its head off to stop it. It was that vicious. It was stealing lambs, I think, from a near a dam. So he sat out there for about 8 nights and finally he got it. It came and he caught it in a trap and, but yeah, it was it was meant to have gone to the South Australian Museum, but they've got no record of receiving it, you know. So,
oh really?
Of course.
Well, this is the thing. Like the evidence, even like the WA ones that have been, like, it's, you don't even have to look too hard to realize that a couple of them have been found here.
Oh yeah, digs. Like, there was two found in the 1960s. There was one at Mundrabilla Cave in WA, and there was one at Murray Aluellen Cave in South Australia, and they were both very fresh.
Yeah, that's right.
Mm. Oh, that you can see, they're in the WA Museum. You can see them. You can arrange to see them.
Oh, that one you can. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But, yeah, but, there's lots. I think you'll find there's probably not a huge amount of physical evidence in the shape of bodies in the on the mainland. But there's been a few over the years. I reckon probably over the years I know of at least – about 7 or 8 that have been shot by people on the mainland over the years. One family in New South Wales actually shot 2 because they thought they were dingoes in the distance both times, and both times they shot thylacines. So that was out near the
It's just so much
Darling River out there.
So much good evidence. And, what I was going to ask you before, going back to Aboriginals, what are the, have you ever come across, asked any of them, what do they say about them?
We have actually. I've got friends up in Darwin who are from Arnhem Land, and they've got a word for the thylacine still that they still use. So that is an indication that they believe the animal's still there. Mm. I think they're calling it tikido. I can't remember the word actually, but the other people we know from the Flinders Ranges, the Adyamantha people, they still revere the animal. In our documentary, Living a Thylacine Dream, on our YouTube channel, we chat to a lady from up there and her brother, Ken and Regina McKenzie, and he sings a song about the thylacine still from their language.
Yeah,
it's
fascinating. Yeah.
And that's Regina's crazy. Seen them 3 times, I think, or 4 times. She saw them with a... She saw 2 with her mum and her daughter one day, and they all freaked out and packed up their picnic and jumped in the car and got the hell out of there because they had always looked at them as a spirit animal that was no longer there, but then they saw them, so that changed everything.
Yeah, I can imagine. And like, I was going to ask you that, then we'll start wrapping up. But going back right back to the start, when you first saw one and you first kind of came to the realization of what you had seen, what did that actually feel like?
It was really confusing the first time because I didn't get a really good look at it, but there was no other animal that it could have been. So it left me kind of wanting more, but didn't really inspire me to go looking for more. But the second time, after that second time, that really lit the spark, you know.
You knew.
I knew. I just wanted to know more, and that was, you know, I mean, as much as I hate social media and the internet and everything in general, Facebook was a goldmine of information, just a goldmine. The amount of people that came forward over the last 8 years and given me information is just mind-blowing, or 10 years all up.
Yeah, well, that's the one thing, like I said before, it's really surprised me, you know, just the sheer weight of stuff that's out there. I thought, oh, I'll start looking, see if I can find something.
Well, we've got over 200 interviews on our website, just about, on our YouTube. I'm pretty sure I've done 168 videos now, and John did about 130 or something. So there's a lot of info there. If you just mapped out those,
undeniable.
On their own, that's still a lot.
Yeah, it's undeniable, and it's a lot of work. It's obviously you're passionate, something that you're really passionate about now.
Yeah, I mean, I've always said, you know, it doesn't matter who proves it as long as someone does. You know, it'd be great if it was me.
I think you've already done that.
You know, I'd love to prove it. That's why I do it, but not just for me though. Well, you know, just because I really want to see it. I'd love to see 1080 get banned. That shit is just used so recklessly. Our government should be held to account a lot more for what they do with that shit, because they just throw it out of helicopters and planes now, you know. It's random.
Yeah. They use it over here as well.
Yeah, it's shocking. Yeah,
it's one of the things. It's actually – it's funny because it's one of the things I'm pretty passionate about too, being a bushman. I'd like to see myself as, you know, a bushman, like any kind of poison.
Well, you can't take your fucking dog anywhere anymore, you know.
It's just a no-no. Well, it's what it's doing to native animals, and it gets into the system, and
it takes out everything and all the rest of it. Devastating shit.
Yeah.
The off-target damage is horrendous.
Yeah.
So it's a big one.
And they just,
you know, for me, it's okay for the government to do it. That's the best outcome if we prove this thing exists. Best case scenario is no more 1080.
I was going to say before, you know what, I think that you've already proven it. Just that the rest of the world hasn't realized that yet. But in my eyes, you've already proven it, Neil. And you know, I take my hat off to you, all the work and effort they've put in. And I think it's only a matter of time, and hopefully in our lifetime, before we're, checking out that, you know, we will get actual proper confirmation.
We'll be having that
the government will recognize it.
Having that cascade draft
with
the tigers on the
way. When they realize that, oh, actually, then you can say, hey, this guy, Neil, he's been saying this for years. So the chickens will come home to roost. I think it's only a matter of time, mate, honestly.
Yeah, look, it probably is. And there's been so many mentions of relics over the years that have ended up being dead ends. But this latest one, I've got a photo of this latest relic. But I'm not releasing it until I've made contact with the local Indigenous people. So once I've done that, then I'll release the photo. So I've reached out to them.
I'll look forward to that.
Hopefully we can catch up and I can go over there and have a chat to them, and maybe we can do a bit of a film of it and make a bit of an announcement if we can get to that stage. If we can't, we know it's there. We've got a photo of it. I believe the story to be 100% genuine. It's in good care. It's in the custodian's hands, so I could probably hang my hat up after that, even if we don't get the extinction label removed, you know?
Yeah, looks like, man, like I said, I take my hat off to you. You've done awesome work. And, yeah, I'll, for all the listeners, I'll put all the links to all your stuff in the description so they can go and check out the channel and they can see for themselves. And like you say, you know, I love it, man, when like you have a video and it's like a Tasmanian tiger and then it cuts to a shot of you and you just go, that's pretty interesting footage. Like, it's just undeniable, you know, in my view. And yeah, I'm loving it, man.
I'm a little bit random that way.
Awesome to follow. No, I like your honesty, you know, and the fact that you're not trying to like make it out something that's that it isn't, you know. And it's like, I would encourage anybody to go look and judge for themselves and tell me what you think.
But I am my own cameraman, director, editor and script writer, and there isn't any of that. So it's pretty the videos are pretty raw and rough. John, who used to do our YouTube channel before, he's an ex-editor from Channel 7. He used to do really schlick production on the stuff, and then I took over the channel a couple of years ago, and the quality has gone downhill rapidly, but the quantity is up. We've got a lot more material out there. That was the aim of the game.
Oh, the quality is like, oh, man, like I said, I reckon you've got the best videos, in my view, like the best stuff, and it seems to be coming now. People seem to be coming to you. You know, people that have got the good stuff seem to be coming to you because they know that you'll represent it properly, you know?
Yeah, well, I've always tried to maintain that, you know, and make sure that people are happy with the way we handle their stuff. I've sat on, you know, way more than what I've revealed as far as interviews go and information that people have given me. I haven't revealed, you know, 20% of it, 30% of it, you know. It's a privilege to have that info, but we treat it with respect, and hopefully the right info will eventually land in our lap and we'll get this over the line.
All right, Neil. Well, I just want to thank you again, mate, for giving me the time and coming on. I've wanted to have this chat for a long time with someone who actually, like I said, knows what they're talking about. And, hopefully one day we'll be cracking a beer watching a real one. To me, it'd be like a – it fascinated me since I was a kid, like I said, you know, you said at the start, you know, just thought, oh, wouldn't it be cool, you know, if there's one still out there. And I think without a doubt, in my view, because of you and through you, I've realised that, yeah, they're still out there 100%.
Mate, that's my mission done right there.
All right. Thanks again, Neil. We'll wrap it up. And, I really appreciate your time.
That's all right. No worries. Intense chemistry, best be aware, new blood starting to drip.